Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I mean, I have so many ideas.
This is AJ and Dusty.
Some are simple, like take down traffic lights and eliminate the post office.
With AJ McCord.
I think this is going to be a really good bonding session. Guys love it when you can show them you're better than they are at something they love.
And Dusty Hera.
I've never taken the high road, but I tell other people to, because then there's more room for me on the low road.
AJ and Dusty on 1080.
Don't be all like,
I am a guy and I like fire.
The Fan.
Hour number three, AJ and Dusty with you. Coming up this hour, we got Numbers Lie at 2:30. And Derrick Henry being back, what does that mean for the Tennessee Titans?
Potentially big things.
I think it does. But right now, we got to talk some Seahawks. Michael Sean Dugard from The Athletic covers the Seahawks. Friend of the show, kind enough to join us. Michael Sean, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. All right, Ken Norton Jr. out as defensive coordinator for the Seahawks. This is a big change up in Seattle. What does it mean for the new direction of the Seahawks? And do you think they bring new blood in, or are they going to look within like they did the last time they hired a DC?
I guess technically he was within last time. They kind of stole Ken from the Niners, I believe, when he got fired from Oakland. He had already accepted a job as like the Niners linebackers coach, I believe. And then Pete just called him and said, hey, I need you again. And then he came up. So I guess that was an in-house hire, but you could look at that either way. I think that what it means is, you know, Pete is still a creature of habit. I mean, last time they missed the playoffs, he fired his defensive coordinator. If they miss it again, whoever they hire this time will probably get canned, probably along with Pete. So I don't know if it means much for the direction, just because Pete has such a, not, I don't want to say stranglehold, but he controls the personnel, right? Like, mm-hmm. He took this job knowing that, hey, I want to control a little bit of everything. So he controls the personnel, controls the offense, controls the defense, controls the special teams. You know, as long as you keep all of those ingredients that he wants in place, you know, nothing really changes on too much of a structural, fundamental level.
Now, that makes sense. One of the things that I think you were reporting is that they are going to interview the Bears defensive coordinator. So how quickly do you think that they're going to sort of make a move here?
I think they got to go fast. There's a lot of jobs open right now in the NFL. What is it, like 8 head coaching jobs are open? I think it's what, like a fourth of the league? That's a lot. So that means you got to have 8 defensive coordinators hired as well. So they got to move quick. And I don't think, I mean, it's not like there's just a run on, you know, defensive masterminds out there, right? If you're unemployed, chances are you probably weren't doing like a fantastic job if you're interviewing for defensive coordinator jobs. Now, if you're unemployed and you're interviewing for head coaching jobs, then maybe you're kicking butt. Like someone like Dan Quinn, you know, right now kicking butt, you know, of the Cowboys. So, yeah, I think this will probably go pretty fast. They'll probably want their coaches in place by the Senior Bowl so they can all go down there together or at least watch the tape or whatever together and move pretty fast. The guys that Pete's interested in, dude from the Bears, Ed Donatello, dude from the Broncos, their own guy, Clint Hurt. It appears that, you know, Pete really liked the Bears' 2015 defense. I don't know what it is about that particular defense, but everyone he wants to talk to is from that staff. So now my next job is to go watch the Bears 2015-2016 defense and figure out if they were secretly the Legion of Boom in disguise. Pete's trying to recreate that, apparently, with his new hire.
You know what? Like, fans just want to point to coordinators, and, you know, whether it's the offensive coordinator, you want him fired, defensive coordinator, want him fired. But Jimmy's and Joe's and X's and O's, like, those are always the debate, and you can't have a great X's and O's if you don't have the dudes to do it. Where, from a talent standpoint, is this defense, though? Because they have holes. They have big holes.
Yeah, I mean, no, there isn't anyone in the league, and I mean this legitimately, there's no good defensive coordinator out there consistently producing a top defense with scrubs. That's just not how it works. You need elite talent, you know, and I think all of Pete's defensive coordinators that got head coaching jobs are just such a great illustration, man. When Gus Bradley went to the Jags and Dan Quinn went to the Falcons, you know, and some of his other people, when Ken Norton went to, you know, Oakland, you know, you can't just run cover three all day when you don't have Earl Thomas, right? Like that, All of those coaches were forced to try something else. You know, even Robert Saleh, a little bit in San Francisco, had to mix it up. You know, Gus had to mix it up when he was coordinating the Chargers defense. So I do think that you've got to draft really well, you know, because you can't just pay a bunch of defensive guys either, because defense is about depth, you know, as much as it's about, you know, having a top-heavy roster. I mean, look at Brandon Staley, right? Perfect example. The Rams. He's coordinating the Rams defense 2021. They like the league in 2020. They like the league on fire. Kill everybody. Well, okay, you had Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. Right? You get to the Chargers, and you don't. And the Chargers defense stinks. In particular, they had the worst run defense in the league. So, like, and none of them, Brandon Staley's not a good coach. It just means that ain't nobody out here making magic happen with scrubs.
Which makes a lot of sense, especially because Seattle does not have that much money to spend this offseason, especially defensively. You talk about Jamal Adams, highest paid safety in the NFL. Bobby Wagner's contract, is that going to be up for discussion? What's going on with Russell Wilson? They have to figure out how to hit on draft picks, and they have not done that to the best of their ability in recent years. What do you think is the biggest thing that needs to change for Seattle to do well this season as far as drafting young talent goes?
I mean, they got to get a little lucky, too. I think that's part of it. We really are not the three of us, but in general, I think we are ignoring the level that luck played in drafting the Legion of Boom, right? Like, they didn't just know, we'll just take Cam Chancellor in the fifth round, you know, like, he'll be this stud. I mean, they took him, they liked him. But if they liked him that much, they'd have took him in the first round, you know, the third round or whatever. You know, same thing with K.J. Wright, who was a fourth-round pick, and Richard Sherman, who was a fifth-round pick. You know, they got the Super Bowl MVP, Malcolm Smith, in the seventh round. You know, they got lucky there. They did some good drafting, but at the same time, they got lucky. Shoot, Bobby Wagner was like the 45th pick or something, like second-round pick. So if they liked him that much, they would have just took him in the first over Bruce Irvin. So I think that they kind of have to do that again. They've got to strike gold. You look at the teams that have, unless you're going to suck, right, and get in the top 10, because you look at some of the best players in the league were all really high picks, with the exception of T.J. Watt, who was the 30th. Other than that, most of the best players were all drafted in the top 10. So unless you're going to suck, you're going to have to strike gold in rounds 2 through 4. And really, without doing that, it's just hard to build a championship defense.
We're talking with Michael Sean Dugar, the Athletic Seahawks beat writer. Now, you know, Pete Carroll saying, you know, he had a positive meeting with Jody Allen and John Schneider last week. And, you know, things, you know, it seemed like that Mr. Positive Pete Carroll was back. This is a big change. How many other big changes do you foresee from the Seahawks this offseason as far as, you know, guys who are parts of this roster, whether, you know, that's Russ or, you know, Bobby Wagner, you know, potentially leaving? Like, it was so many of those conversations was, did Bobby Wagner play his last game in Lumen Field?
Yeah, I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, you know, they're quote unquote running it back with their core people, Russ, John Schneider, Pete Carroll. Well, that's true. I would characterize it as running it back. They cannot necessarily do that with the roster, even if they wanted to. They got a lot of unrestricted free agents. I can't even probably name them all off the top of my head, but they got them at some really expensive spots. You know, both starting corners, both starting tackles, both starting tight ends. Like, that right there is, you could blow $80 million on those four positions if you really wanted to, or those three positions, excuse me, in free agency if you really wanted to. Not to mention Quandre Diggs, you know, their starting free safety being a free agent, you know. So they've got some really expensive guys. They're most of their running back room, including Rashad Penny. It's going to be hard to just quote unquote run it back with that same roster as much as they may like to because of how they finished the year. I mean, even they got what, like $52 million or something like that to blow right now. They spent $52 million ahead of the 2020 season, and their biggest free agent acquisition that year was, you know, bringing in Greg Olsen. And their second most expensive move that year was re-signing Jaren Reed, not even a new guy. So I just don't know. This money can dry up real fast without making a splashy move, which is what I think is going to happen. And they're going to have a lot of dudes who contributed to the success of the back end of 2021 planned for other teams just because of money.
Now, I know you were one of the people who was watching Russell Wilson's appearance on the Manning cast incredibly closely, just looking for any clues that might be dropped. We've since heard that there was some sort of agreement that, hey, we're not going to talk about your future as long as you come on the Manning cast. But he did end it with a go Hawks. So I think that's actually second nature at this point. But what do you think about Russell Wilson's offseason? Where do you think it goes from here? And what do you think it's just like, whether or not Russ comes back to Seattle, what do you think that's decided on?
Russell? I think Russell controls it. He really did. I was thinking about this, you know, this morning, just because I was working on, I was doing some research for a story, and I just, it's so fascinating. You look at where some of the rumors come from and the leaks on some of this stuff over the past few years, like go back all the way to his first contract negotiation and the talk that he might play baseball. Or remember that time we were all wondering where he wanted to play for the Giants. And it was just like, this is so strange. This just seems all Russ engineered. Like, I was looking for a specific leak or two that was like, all right, let me see one that looks like it came from the team. And I couldn't even find it. You know, I had to go do something else. It took me that long. Because I really think all of this is engineered by him. And it's just so, I don't know why he's doing that. I just don't understand. You know, he says on TV he's happy and he wants to be, you know, a Seahawk for 20 years and finish his career here, win multiple Super Bowls here. It's like, he's probably not lying. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, dude, you might be, you know, because when you're happy, you don't have one foot out the door. You don't have the Rappaport, oh, he wants to explore his options. You don't have just four teams on deck that your agent tells Schefter you want to get traded to. You know, when you're happy, you don't do those things. Now, you guys are in Portland. Like, if Dame was doing that, you know, the fact that Dame had that meeting with LeBron, you know, at the rooftop or whatever this summer, that shows you Dame's not happy. You don't do that if you want to stay, if you're committed to staying in Portland, you know. So, I you know, when Giannis was losing, he didn't go meet with LeBron, you know. He probably went to Greece or whatever. So I think that Russ is engineering all this. I don't know what's going to happen, but the conclusion I've kind of made is that, like, Russ's word just can't be trusted at this point. Him saying he wants to be in Seattle just does not match his actions over the last, like, 5 years.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up Dame because, you know, Jody Allen in her ownership, you know, we talked about this last time we had you on, is that, you know, we were kind of like, have you heard anything about Jody Allen? Because we haven't heard anything but down here in her role. It was encouraging to hear, though, that, you know, Pete Carroll came out and he said that he'd met with Jody, with John Schneider, and she wants what's best for this franchise moving forward. Can we read into anything this offseason in her actually sitting down with Pete and John and having those conversations? Because we haven't seen much of that or heard much of that down here in Portland except for right when the season gets over.
Yeah, I don't think we can read too much into it on the Seahawks side. I was mentioning this to someone else. I want to know who else Jody talks to, right? Mm. Does he only get her assessment of how the Seahawks are doing from, like, Pete and John? I was like, because if that's the case, it's going to sound real rosy all the time. Right? You're not going to get, you know, a real world brutal, because then someone has to assess them. You know what I mean? Like, how does she get a feel for how Pete's really received among his staff or his players? I'm sure it's fine, but, like, I talk to people that aren't coaches there, that aren't Pete and John, to get those assessments. And if your only assessment of the Seahawks comes from those two, then you're never going to make any changes, right? Because, like, what are they going to say? Hey, Jody, we don't know what's going on, so get us out of here. So I think that's really important. You know, like, when Cam Chancellor tweeted a few weeks ago, hey, I need to meet with Jody Allen and talk about the future of the franchise. Like, I hope she took that meeting, because she should talk to Cam.
Yep.
And she should talk to Russell and then talk to Bobby. talk to some practice squad guys, talk to some agents. I don't know, just like get a feel for the franchise outside of the two dudes at highest up the food chain. Because if you're Jody and you're relying on those two to kind of get the state of the franchise, well, they'll be here forever then. Because if it's one thing Pete can do, and he's shown us in these press conferences, boy, he can sell some optimism.
Oh, Michael and Sean,
if he's selling it to us, I know he's selling it to Jody. I guarantee that.
I was going to say, Michael Sean, she would have to actually care to take those meetings. That's the difference. Yeah.
You know what? I wouldn't rule out that she's just – I do think she cares. I'm sure she – you know, my guess would be you care. But, I mean, I wouldn't rule out that this wasn't her plan to, you know, be running the Blazers and, you know, running the Seahawks and dealing with Russ's agenda and, you know, dealing with, you know, all the fallout from, like, even the Chauncey Billups thing. Like, I don't want to deal with that stuff. I wouldn't rule that out either, you know. Probably wasn't her goal to be running two NFL teams. They're brothers' dreams, so – I don't know how much she cares. I don't want to speak that into the air too much. But, I mean, it is a lot that she's dealing with. And, yeah, you do have to – you got to have, like, a Jerry Jones-level obsession with your team to be that involved. And I think the Cowboys are not well-run, but, like, Jerry's involved, and that part does matter.
Well, yeah, that's what her brother did. Paul Allen loved the Portland Trailblazers, like to a fault in some years with falling in love with players and hold on to them for too long and paying them too much and drafting Ha Sung Jin. But, you know, it was it was something that he cared. And when you care about something, you'll put your money behind it. Yep. And you'll put all the effort to it.
And you'll surround yourself with a lot of people who can give you input. That's a really good point.
Right. That's right. Michael Sean, we appreciate your time, man. I hope you get an off season this year and that things quiet down a little bit, but I feel like it's just starting for the Seahawks and the rumor mills. Thank you for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. Have a good one. Peace.
Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic covers the Seahawks. It's going to be like it's the same thing that Portland's going to go through this offseason as well. A lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting that like what he brought up, which is that, you know, who else is Jody talking to? And Bert Cold, right? For that matter. Like, who else are they talking to other than Pete and John Schneider? Because if you're happy with your job, you're never gonna go into your boss and be like, hey, I might be the problem.
Yeah. Guess what? I'm the guy that's the problem here.
No, it's not gonna happen.
Oh, well, it's the Neil conundrum.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yes.
All right. He passed the final test and the number one seed might actually be healthy. AJ and Dusty on the Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
AJ and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
A big hurdle has been cleared by Derrick Henry today. Mike Vrabel saying Tractocito has made it through his first contact practice.
Dang.
November 1st is the last time he was out on the field. Foot injury has been had him sidelined. Yep. He's been out for a long time, and this Titans offense has not missed a beat. This is big for Tennessee. Get the number one overall seed that they were able to, you know, come out of the AFC. You know, it was like one of those cartoons where everybody was fighting. You have the big dust up, and you had no idea who was going to fall out of it. Well, it ended up being the Tennessee Titans at the end. And down that stretch, they did it without the best running back in the league.
Yep. And you look at like the teams they beat. There are some, you know, expected.
They
in
play in the AFC South.
Like
we can
the
call
Jaguars
it what it is.
And the Texans and the Dolphins, but they also beat the Rams and the Saints, who at the time were like a decent team. And then they beat the 49ers as well. And they did all that without Derrick Henry. And from looking at this, they didn't really get away from running the football either. Like, they still ran the football pretty effectively and kept that a very, like, true and critical part of their playbook. And so the fact that they've been able to do that without having their leading rusher, I think, is massive. And when you think about having to game plan for a Tennessee Titans team with Derrick Henry, who you already know they're, like, committed to running the football, and now they have the best rusher in the game potentially back... Whew, that changes things.
It really does. But we saw Cam Akers 5 months off.
Yep.
And how he was able to look. The thing with, I just can't get back in away from the very first video I saw of like, hey, Derrick Henry's back at practice. Mm. He was limping so bad in that video. And it was like, yeah, he's back. And it looked like he was limping. Apparently he kept clearing every single hurdle, you know, and that may have just been one practice in that one video. And, you know, you've seen him running since, and he looks a lot more comfortable out there. That, to me, is the ultimate game changer in the playoffs, because we've seen the downfall of the of the Titans, and downfall of teams that rely so heavily on the run, is those guys wear down, right?
Right.
You mentioned it earlier, Raheem Mostert.
Yeah.
When he had his coming out party in the NFC Championship game with like 220 yards rushing.
Yep.
You know, they had a guy who was more fresh legs, and his coming out party came then. That's where guys like pop, like we've seen in years past with, you know, Sony Michel when he was in New England, had a great run in the postseason, because you have somebody who's more fresh than beat down and worn down. Well, when you have a workhorse like a Derrick Henry, you usually ride that guy into the ground by the end of the year. Not this year for Derrick Henry. He's maybe coming off an injury, but he has not been taking those hits time and time again.
Especially because of the way Derrick Henry runs, right? He's not like an Alvin Kamara who's really slippery and shifty and goes through the line like that. He just runs right through you.
He'll beat the hell
out
of
you. That's his whole game plan, is like, I don't care if you're standing in my way. I'm going to go, like, if you won't go, if you're not going to move, you will be moved. That's his whole game plan. And he does it incredibly well. And so the fact that he's had so many weeks of not taking that beating, like, sure, the foot injury, right? That's like the biggest, that's your primary injury. But think of all the other nicks and bruises that add up over an entire season, especially a 17-week season. As a running back, you've got ab injuries, you've got shoulder stuff going on, you've got quad stuff going on, simply because of the nature of your position and what's asked of you week in and week out, and you're at the bottom of every single pile. I've never talked to a single NFL running back who hasn't said, Monday after a Sunday game, feels like I was in a car accident, every single time. Like, the amount of recovery that running backs have to do week in and week out to survive a season is insane. And you have Derrick Henry, who not only is he getting his foot healthy, but he's also getting all of that healthy. And I think that is just, I think it's massive for the Titans. Do I think they might beat the Bengals even if he doesn't play? Yes. But I think if Derrick Henry is playing, I think that 3.5-point spread is a little too generous to the Bengals.
I think it's going to be a fun one.
I think so too.
It is going to be a very fun matchup with Cincinnati and Tennessee because of unleashing Joe Burrow that we've seen at the back half of the year.
Yeah.
It is protect one quarterback in Ryan Tannehill, and by running the football and keeping the passing game short, and you've got, you know, AJ Brown, Julio Jones on the outside, but it is run that football. And now they have two other backs that you don't have to rely on Derrick Henry every single game too.
Right.
Or every single down.
Right.
It is a little bit of faith that, hey, you still have a top five rushing offense in the NFL without Derrick Henry.
Yep.
Now you plug him back in and you're going to be a ground and pound, where the best way to beat a quarterback who the Cincinnati Bengals want to put the ball in Joe Burrow's hands is to keep the ball out of his hands.
Yep.
And that is, you know, it may be kind of that old school boring blueprint, but that could be the fun part of it, because we've seen young and these young quarterbacks who have the highlight making plays where, how many teams tried that with Patrick Mahomes, right? Which is, we're going to run the ball and play keep away from this guy.
Yep.
And all you see is explosive drive after explosive drive. And it turns Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and company and boy, T. Higgins, they could just turn it to, no, you keep up with our scoring. I dare you to try to keep up with our scoring with your ground and pound game. And that could be a hell of a game in its own right. It's which will is going to win out, because we've seen both of them had be effective and work. And with Joe Burrow playing with the confidence that he has right now, he is a scary quarterback.
Yes, he is. I think it's going to be super fun. I am excited. I think each one of these matchups is such a, like, it's like a perfect matchup for each of these games, right? Like the Bengals versus the Titans is, how do I say this? Like the matchup itself is great. It's not just because it's going to be a close game, but because of the storylines going into each one and how they match up with their opponent makes it feel like, oh, this is going to be great.
I love it. We got to, and then tomorrow we're going to really dive into this matchup because we have got two quarterbacks playing in the Bills Chiefs game where you talked with Trista about the over under in that game. Was it 54 and a half?
Yeah.
The highest of the weekend. That game could just be a touchdown fiesta, and I'm here for all of it.
Yeah, that could it very well. But they also have good defenses, exactly like she said. So they're.
I want none of that defense. I want Mahomes. I want Josh Allen, and I want the overtime to be who can throw the ball farthest, because that needs to happen because they are the two most powerful arms in the NFL.
I don't love your odds of getting that rule implemented by the weekend, but
whatever.
You, good luck.
Okay.
All right, boys, take your shoulder pads off.
On the goal line.
We're going to have a good old throw-off.
Who could throw this football out of that stadium?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say over the mountains, and I was going to know the movie reference.
Oh, well, what movie would that be?
Well,
oh,
I was going to know that it was a movie reference.
Come on.
Oh, no.
English Patient.
Oh, no. Patch Adams, close. Napoleon Dynamite. We were looking
that
for
one.
Napoleon Dynamite.
What was the uncle?
Uncle Rico.
Rico.
Yeah.
Uncle Janet Reno.
Close.
Uncle Janet Reno.
I get a half point.
The Attorney General of Tupperware.
I get a half point.
The hell is going on right now?
We're just mashing all of the references together into one.
It's fine. I'm not even more confused than I was to begin with.
Hey, here's the thing. Derrick Henry, he has cleared contact. So that's the next step in pulling him off the IR, getting him activated for this week.
There we go.
All right.
More likely we'll see Derrick Henry than we'll see your ideal overtime rules implemented this weekend.
Thank God. Numbers lie after Will with SportsCenter.
This is AJ and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
Got some portal news coming up to finish
portal.
Off the show. But they say numbers never lie. We will prove to you, nay, they do. Numbers lie. Will Darkins. Oh, boy. He's here. He's ready.
Wow. Panic or patience always gets you in the mood.
Ladies.
You mean numbers lie.
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, what's up?
How's it going?
That's good. Hey, Bruce Arians got fined $50,000. We already talked about that. He was swiping his hand at safety Andrew Adams' helmet.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
That
hit?
I did. I look. I did not think that warranted being called striking or a $50,000 fine.
I was like a. It was like a. Like a.
It was like a.
SWAT? I was trying to think
of
like
what
kind of
like. It was like a tap on the head and like, hey, stop.
It was like up. It was like, you know, it was like a, come on, get it together kind of hit.
It's like what your parents can do to you by the time you're age 12 to get your attention.
Yeah, because it was kind of like the back of the head.
Yeah.
You know?
Or it's like they don't feel bad about hitting you anymore. And it's just like,
or what a coach does when you're wearing a helmet and trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway.
All right. This got me thinking. Because this is kind of an interesting concept. What would you wager in dollars is the largest fine ever doled out by the NFL to an individual in league history?
Oh, man.
Oh, wasn't it Robert Kraft for the Orchids of Asia deal?
No. I don't think he got fined for that, did he?
I think he did.
Oh.
I would hope he did, but I don't remember how that played out.
Actually. I would hope too, but I mean,
I'm going to go with $750,000, Bob.
Okay.
To an individual?
Yeah.
I'll go with $700,000.
I think we're way off.
Okay, Price is right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. It's not closest.
You were both wrong. It is actually Eddie DiBartolo.
Oh.
Junior.
49ers.
$1 million.
Wow.
For what? What did Eddie DiBartolo get in trouble for?
This is after his involvement with the corruption case of a former governor.
Oh.
He received 1 year probation from running the club. As a billionaire owner, such cash really didn't seem like too much.
Yeah.
It's just $1 million. Probably $20 to you and I.
Worth it. Yeah.
Here's some other notable ones. Gotcha. Jamal Lewis, $760,000. He was hit hard by the NFL. He was forced to spend 4 months in prison after he got drug charges.
Oh.
That was when he went to court in 2004. Belichick, $500,000. That was the ripple effect from Spygate.
Spygate.
Yeah. Jim Irsay got $500,000 as well. Suspended 6 games, and that was when he was driving intoxicated, if we all remember Jim Irsay's,
He was not punished for that. Robert Kraft not punished, by the way, because he won the video, never got released.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't think that was the case. Ray Lewis, who definitely did not commit double murder or was involved in it, was assessed $250,000 fine. Remember that?
I do.
Why does that not get talked about more? That after a Super Bowl, Lewis got accused of double murder.
It does get talked about all the time, and nobody cares.
That's like the bigger issue.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's it.
Like,
yeah.
It gets talked about. Just like, hey.
I would say of most of the absolutely egregious crimes committed or NFL players have been accused of, that one gets talked about far more than a lot of them.
It's probably just right under Michael Vick.
Yeah, where's Dan?
He wasn't guilty.
Where's Dan Snyder at?
Wasn't proven guilty. All right, yeah. Dan Snyder.
Oh, wait, no, it was just the team? It just the team that got fined for Dan Snyder? That was a legit question.
Didn't he have to give the ownership technically to his sister?
His wife.
Wife. Whatever.
Yeah, he's not doing anything.
Right. Fine.
That's actually a badass place to be in. You run everything. I'll just shadow run it.
Not my problem. I didn't do it.
All right, Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy is basically operating business as usual after losing to the 49ers in embarrassing fashion. He told media members he does not feel like his job is in threat. Stephen Jones, as we heard yesterday in some audio from an Odyssey sister station, him saying, well, no, Mike McCarthy's job not in peril. That got me to thinking.
Always a dangerous proposition.
Well, over under. 10 head coaches have held that role in Dallas Cowboys history.
10 head coaches?
Over under. Over. 10 head coaches in Dallas Cowboys history.
Oh.
I'll say under. Well, they've been around a really long time, actually. I'll say over.
Yeah, but Landry had that job for a long time.
Yeah. Well, you said
and then
over.
Jimmy Johnson. And then, I know, because I wanted you to go under. So
okay, I'll go under. Jeez.
Thank God.
Playing Jedi mind tricks with you. All right, who's doing what now?
I'm going under.
Okay. Dusty?
Over.
Over.
All right, Dusty. AJ.
You sounded so irritated. Duh. You already said that.
It's 9.
Ooh, really close, though.
9 times.
It'll be a push by the end of the month.
Tom Landry, Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer, Chan Gailey. Anybody remember that one?
I do remember Chan Gailey.
Dave Campo for 3 seasons.
Do you remember Dave Campo as well?
Bill Parcells, good old Wade
Big
Phillips.
Tuna.
Jason Garrett and Mike McCarthy.
Wow.
I forgot about Chan Gailey.
Yikes.
That was a weird time.
Now, that was the hard time in the franchise's history was when they were going through Dave Campo, Chan Gailey, and then Bill Parcells. They were like, we finally got our guy. No. Then Jerry was in the way after that.
Yeah. Bill Parcells was a weird one. That was open pass expiration date right there.
True that.
All right. Here's a fun one. A group of crypto enthusiasts, that's cryptocurrency.
Yes.
Have made an unusual purchase. It's a rare copy of Dune, the science fiction book written by Frank Herbert.
Uh-huh.
Anybody read it or heard of it?
I have heard of it, and I've also heard the theory that this was the original idea for Star Wars.
Oh. Yeah. I never heard of that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm still learning how to read.
Well, I know you've had my book for about 5 months.
That's true. I'll give that back to you.
So
I just want you to read it.
These crypto nerds basically bought a rare copy of Dune, and they appear to believe that owning this copy, they have publicly stated, has given them the copyright to do with it what they will, the franchise.
So the whole franchise?
Yes, these crypto nerds believe that they have bought like the first original copy of Dune and that it gives them the licensing rights to Dune, which, as we all know, if you don't, that's not how copyrights work.
No, this is like Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy. I declare bankruptcy!
Yeah, I don't think...
You can't just
do
that, Michael.
I don't think that's how that works.
No, it's not.
Oh, yeah, this is actually a pretty common theory. Is that Dune shaped the Star Wars saga.
Wow.
A lot of articles on it.
I still can't get over it. Like, so they think they can just, like, they want to make NFTs, right? And just sell, the crypto bros want to sell NFTs of...
Yeah, you're sniffing up the right tree.
Dune.
There. Yeah.
Mm.
Over under $1.5 million those nerds spent on that sci-fi book.
Over.
Over. I'll take under, so one of us wins. I bet
these dorks spent a lot of money on
$1.5 million.
$1.5 million they spent on this, what they believed was a rare version. Now this is U.S. dollars.
Okay, I'm gonna go over also.
So both over?
Yeah. Sorry. Okay.
Wait.
Good job.
Yeah.
$3.4 million.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me. Also, the audacity, I think you can own like an entire thing.
But a rare version of Dune?
Hey, like, you know what I would do?
I don't know.
I would make sure that I own the copyrights before spending that type of money on it.
I'm just going to throw
that one out there. Be like, hey, we have good legal standing on this, right? Instead of just being like, no, dude.
Well, but if you got in on crypto.
I bought it on eBay, so I own it.
If you got into crypto early, $3.5 million is actually probably not much.
That's very true.
Either that or you have a crap lawyer. So wait a minute. You're telling me after I sign this, I have the rights, right? Oh, yeah. Oh, I read through all of it.
It's every page. Everything's fine.
Hold on. There's an ambulance. I got to chase it. I'll be back.
Hey, any of you guys going through any car injuries or divorce or something? Can help you out?
My neck hurts. This call will be $5,000. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, that is Numbers Lie. When we come back, we got some portal news. We have three names in the portal that all are pretty interesting.
Okay.
Locally. AJ and Dusty on the Fan.
This is AJ and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
Heads were scratching earlier in the day when JT Daniels, Georgia quarterback, entered the portal. The former USC quarterback is now looking like he's a former Georgia quarterback as well.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting.
Well, we found out why just moments ago. Stetson Bennett, who... I still stand by this. He's a jerk, and I like that about him.
But conquering hero.
He has got a lot of a-hole in him.
Mm.
Remember after like the national title game when he was like, yeah, I know I'll be playing. I don't know if I'm playing here or not or what my future has. It's like, dude, you just won a national title. You were talking about how it's your boyhood dream. What are you going to transfer?
Well, no, I think that was leaving room for Georgia to be like, I don't know if Georgia's going to want me.
Right. Well, he's coming back, and now JT Daniels is gone.
Well, that makes sense.
So that is happening in the transfer portal. So JT Daniels is now going to be in the portal for the second time in 3 years, I believe.
So does he have to sit out a year?
I think he will, or unless he graduated, which he might have by now.
Okay.
Also, Jackson Dart, the USC quarterback.
Yes.
It was like this foregone conclusion. He was down to Ole Miss and Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he's visiting BYU.
Ooh.
And there's something to keep an eye on there.
Yeah.
Because when he was in high school, he's from Utah. He said his strongest and longest relationship in the recruiting process was with BYU.
Interesting.
And loved what they did with Zach Wilson.
Mm.
And so he ended up going to SC. He's been bouncing around. That's an one to keep an eye on is Jackson Dart could go.
Very to interesting. BYU. The portal giveth and the portal taketh away.
All right, primetime next. Have a great Wednesday. See you Thursday right here on The Fan.
From the 36th chamber, bring it to him proper, partner.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.